Trent Henry, our guest, looking so forward to it. This guy has so much knowledge in the talent space. So I'm not going to even try to give the list of everything he's done. I'm going to just hand it off to Trent. And Trent, if you could just introduce yourself, you know, who you are, what you do, and then let's just jump into it.
Well, first of all, thanks, Jack. It's great to be here with you today. I'm Trent Henry. I am the Global Vice Chair of Talent for EY. I'm in charge of kind of developing and executing the strategy for an organization that has 400,000 people operating in 150 very complex countries around the world. Jack, but I want to be honest and humble right up front. You know, I am not an HR consultant by trade, so I've been in this role for just over 5 years. It's been an amazing experience, and we'll talk more about that. Prior to stepping into this role, I was actually the chairman and CEO of EY Canada, so one of the Canadian member firms, one of the large member firms at EY. Over my 30-some year career, I've lived in five different cities around the world, including the US and Canada, and done lots of different things. And I'm sure we'll get into that as we get deeper into the discussion.
Yeah, that's amazing. So with that background, I mean, you have such a vast knowledge of what's happening in the marketplace. What are you seeing now in terms of hiring, in terms of the job market, in terms of the psyche of job seekers?
Well, first of all, I think, Jack, from an outside-in perspective, people have a lot to absorb right now, right? There's lots going on in the world. It started a couple of years with COVID. Then we've seen kind of prevalence of kind of geopolitical issues around the world. And now we're seeing some, you know, concerning numbers around the economy in the U.S. specifically, if people who are following closely the banking situation. That's creating some anxiety and stuff. But I think these are all cycles. My own belief is they're all manageable. And fundamentally, I see, you know, the continued role of kind of technology in all things. And of course, you know, we started this great discussion about, you know, things like generative AI, ChatGPT. You saw Microsoft's announcement with Copilot, for example. These things are all driving, you know, potentially really great changes in productivity. And, you know, particularly in developed markets, you know, productivity has been a big issue for a long time. And so I think this is really starting an interesting discussion about, you know, the skills required, the business strategies, and of course, the impact of society around, you know, just AI, the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you know what I mean.
And for yourself, if you don't mind my asking, like, how did you get to where you are? Like, what's your backstory?
You know, I think, I tell my children all the time, I mean, look, the stars need to align. But, you know, funny, I come from a single parent home. I was fortunate enough, my mom was a university professor, and my four siblings and I all have kind of multiple degrees, and education was at the very root of it. You know, we come from a pretty humble background, but education was what was prioritized. And I think it created a lifelong curiosity, honestly, Jack. So when I look at my own opportunities, I was willing to put myself out there. As I said before, I've moved five times with the firm. I didn't have a master plan, right? I didn't plan these all out. It wasn't always kind of upward mobility. My career has been a little bit more like a jungle gym. And I tell people all the time, that's okay. I mean, what's really worked well for me in hindsight, and it wasn't planned enough or well enough, but I did get an incredible diversity of experiences working in different markets, working in different businesses, and working with different people. And I think the best example I could give you, Jack, is people often say, like, Trent, you were the chair and CEO of the Canadian firm. You kind of ran a complete business. You know, why did you jump into HR? And I think at the time, Jack, it was funny. I was going off on this great trip to Silicon Valley with a contingent from Canada, just to look at kind of, you know, how US and Canada would work together on AI going forward. And we spent some great time at Google and Facebook and Tesla and the other kind of big technology companies in the Valley. And we had their CEOs there. We had some great dialogues. And I remember Eric Schmidt standing up at the end of it. And I asked Eric a question about, you know, like, you know, you're an Alphabet, you're Google. I mean, you've got this incredible employer brand. And he stopped me right there and he said, Trent, you know, that's an interesting comment you make. He said, you know, 10 years ago, you know, Google hired whoever that they wanted. He said, now we're seeing just the competition for the talent is just so intense that, you know, unless we win the war on talent, we won't kind of continue to have kind of the market leading position. So right there and then I said, you know what, I'm going to jump into this role full speed. I'm going to accept this role. And Jack, it's probably the most aggressive learning I've had at any stage of my career. I mean, to lead the EY talent agenda is a privilege, but if you just think about where we are with generative AI right now, all the disruption we went through with COVID, kind of rethinking kind of the future of work, it's just been the most incredible opportunity. So again, as you can probably tell, I'm quite optimistic about the future opportunities. You know, I think the world will get through kind of these mega cycles. And I think I'm not worried about kind of what AI will do. I think it will radically change many of the jobs that exist. But I think it's going to create more opportunity on the other side. And as long as people are thinking progressively about the skills that they need. And I do worry a little bit. I think as a society, we have to make sure that access to education is paramount. You know, we've got to make sure we kind of democratize those opportunities. Everybody's got the access to develop these skills. But again, that's an area where actually technology will probably help, not hinder, at least over the long term.
What do you think for AI in the sense that, you know, there's a study from Goldman Sachs where 300 million people are going to either lose their jobs or degraded. Like, I don't know if those things are just like, you know, clickbait or is it real? And then the World Economic Forum just came out with not a 300 million, but also kind of saying here's going to be the winners and losers. So for people who are watching this, listening to this, is there something they could do to build up their skills, maybe to learn about AI, to maybe reposition themselves, pivot, reinvent themselves? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I would say there are many better forecasters than me in terms of the impact on kind of job losses. And so my kind of quick answer in this is, will jobs be impacted and will there be job losses? And yes, of course there will be. But it really is kind of a yes, but Jack, because I think, you know, again, I think one of the real mega trends, at least in the developed markets, is labor scarcity. And when I talk with clients around the world and look at the EY value proposition, when I look at the workforce planning, which is probably the most common question I get from boards right now, you know, what are you doing from a workforce planning perspective? The need to upskill an organization has never been more critical. I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, people talked about the need to, quote, double the investment in learning and skills so that they would really have the capabilities to drive that forward. I've seen no recent data that tells me what that multiple is now, but it's much larger than it was 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm very optimistic on the future, but you hit the nail on the head. I mean, people are going to have to really adopt a mentality of lifelong learning, upskill themselves and kind of drive for that curiosity. That doesn't mean, though, that some of these legacy leadership skills in particular aren't going to be important. In fact, I would argue many of them are going to be even more important going forward. I mean, coming through COVID, you know, planning the future of work, planning the return to work in the early days after COVID, you know, we've just seen the criticality of the right leadership behaviors, you know, things like empathy and stuff that we didn't talk about that much, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. We talk about, you know, motivating and inspiring. But I now think just understanding the unique circumstances, understanding, you know, the social equity, kind of the DEI context, and then more importantly, understanding that people are individuals. And Jack, what you need versus what Trent needs versus what other people needs, you shouldn't make any assumptions about that. You know, what you need to do is design a value proposition to be kind of diverse, and understand, you know, as we all make this, quote, pivot to skills, that we're providing an environment where people feel great about their upskilling opportunity, the opportunity to build relationships, the opportunity for kind of great mentoring, and frankly, the opportunity to be cared for, too. I think that is probably more important than ever. So, you know, as we go through our own leadership assessment, you know, making sure in the first and foremost, our leaders have the skills they need to be great leaders. You know, how do you demonstrate empathy? Right? How do you create kind of teams in these kind of hybrid and virtual environments? And I think that's got to be an evolving piece of work and science that helps organizations as we move forward.
So would it be a combination of both the company and the individual to learn these new skills? Would the company come to a person, let's say, hey, Jack, you know, we think you can kind of get to the next level, but you really have to work on maybe your soft skills, your communication skills, what have you, or do the workers maybe have a responsibility to themselves to say, you know what, I really want to do X. So maybe I have to go online and find some coursework or maybe ask my boss, hey, how can you, if I go back to school, can I learn such and such? Is it a combination of those? How does that work?
It is a combo, but I think the lens is slightly different. So let me see if I can explain this, Jack. So first of all, from an organizational level, as I said, we have 400,000 people. More than ever, and this is not dissimilar to what other companies are doing, we do much more advanced workforce planning, right? So we try our best to look in our crystal ball, imagine the skills we need to kind of serve our clients and drive the organization forward. Then we can map out at least the skills need. And the reality is kind of those skills are changing dramatically. I was just looking at some of the LinkedIn stats. And in the last 3 months, the top five skills in terms of LinkedIn that they're looking for have all changed. And now they're all, the top five are all generative AI skills. So that was not a key indicator 3 months ago. It is today. That's how fast things are changing. So it makes workforce planning hard. But at least at EY, we know, okay, here's our platform. Here's the skills we believe we need. And we either you can rent, build, or buy these skills, right? So you either hire them, you can access, you know, a gig or contractor workforce. And then fundamentally, we believe the best opportunity is to upskill. Best example I can give you there is sustainability. You know, if you look at people looking for sustainability skills around the world, and it's been 4 or 5 months since I looked, but last time I checked, there were about 7 times as many open opportunities as there were sustainability skills available in the world, right? So your only option there is really to kind of upskill aggressively and then define the right programs and curriculum. So I think that's the organization's kind of fundamental responsibility. And then coming back to the leadership element, making sure that our leaders and our counselors, Jack, have both the tools and the mindset to kind of, you know, force these discussions with their counselees, make sure people are challenging themselves. Again, not a one size fits all. It's very much an it's yours to build, which is our employee value proposition, right? And make sure you're satisfying that. Now, on the employee side, you know, what I tell a lot of people, including my own children, is they really need to, you know, demonstrate curiosity. Curiosity at all things in life, not just in work, you know, in their communities and with all things that they do. So we have a very explicit ask for our people to, you know, we've made huge investments in our badges program, which are those micro credentials that we think are going to be very, very important. As far as I'm aware, Jack, we're the only organization in the world that offers 3 EY master's programs. And this morning, we just had our graduation of our 5th cohort class for what we call the EY Technology MBA by Holt University, which runs that program. So it's the only triple accredited MBA program in the world. It's focused on the technology skills. And of course, we offer that, but it's up to our people to respond and to really upskill. I'm thrilled at the uptake. I mean, we have over 300,000 badges awarded now in recent years. And we just had another cohort of 51 technology MBAs graduate this morning. So again, it fosters a culture of curiosity, but the onus is then on the individual to kind of take advantage of these opportunities and upskill themselves. I think that's going to be really important as organizations kind of chart the path forward. But individuals need to find access, whether it's through your employer or through other means, to make sure you're constantly skilling.
So I love what you're saying, because it really, in a way, empowers, you know, the worker to say, hey, I can't be complacent, and I should reach out and speak to my manager, my boss, supervisor, whomever, to say, hey, I want to get, how do I get in that program? How do I get in that, you know, MBA program with Holt? And, you know, because that'll be a great additional tool in my kit. Or maybe if they don't have something, I imagine maybe bring it up to management, say, hey, I'd like to do such and such, you know, or learn about, you know, AI. Is there maybe a certain program that we could put together at EY so, you know, we could be more competitive?
Yeah, so I love the way you frame that. And let me kind of add one little nuance to it. I mean, if I had a dream, you know, we would be the first organization that truly had a well-developed technology-led employee marketplace, where, you know, you could understand as an organization the entirety of the skills you have. So in our 400,000 workforce and our contract workforce, what skill does EY have? And then on the experience side and then the client side, you know, what are the client experiences and the client opportunities? And you could match those up. So, you know, the next Jack Kelly comes along and says, boy, Trent, I would love to get some experience working in a sustainability project, you know, in X, Y, and Z. You know, then I could look at the database. And so not just put the onus on the employee, but also have a nudge in the system in terms of, you know, link to the staffing, link to the experiences. And I think that's when you can start to really unleash the power of the data strategy, which I think is going to be critical for all organizations, but also then linking that directly to the experience of your people and the skills that both the people and the organization need to serve our clients properly.
Yeah, I don't mean to go on a tangent, but like when you mentioned the 400,000, how, like, to me, it sounds so overwhelming. Like, how do you guys keep track of 400,000 people? And I think you mentioned that, what is it, like 100,000 were, you know, hired over the last year. Like, those numbers are huge. How does that work? How do you keep track of all that?
Well, they really are. I mean, look, we've made some foundational investments in our kind of core HR system. So in the first instance, you know, our core HR systems are really solid. So we know all kind of the information we need to know about our people. I think, Jack, the next iteration, I think what all organizations are trying to do then is map to that a skills ontology that makes sense, so that the organization fundamentally understands the skills it has at its power. And I think that's a real interesting field of study because, you know, sometimes people think about skills too narrowly. Just look at the sustainability example I gave you. You know, in my example, there were 7 open positions for every kind of 1 sustainability person available. But the reality is, to fill that gap, there's lots of people who have 80% of the capability, but not 100%. So then how do you address that kind of 20% capability gap? And I think great organizations are going to develop the framework and the skills to do that. So we have many badges now in sustainability, and we actually have a master's in sustainability, which again is an organizational first, so people can upskill and actually get an accredited master's kind of in sustainability. So that's how you close gaps like that. But we're very proud of the fact. I mean, you know, you asked me about kind of labor trends earlier. I mean, our fiscal year end is June 30th. So last year end, so the year ended June 30th, 22, we hired 160,000 people. Year to date, as of April, we've hired 120,000. So we probably won't hit quite the 160. But Jack, the other thing you're seeing with these labor stats, and again, I talk to my CHRO counterparts regularly, is retention has changed dramatically, right? So we came through this period with a great resignation. And frankly, from a learning perspective, that was a great period of time to just look at the data, you know, spend some time with your employees and understand, okay, why were people making choice decisions? You know, why were they fundamentally reframing their career, their choices, et cetera? But now you map forward and pretty quickly again, you see that retention just driving up. And many organizations now are approaching, you know, all-time highs in terms of retention. So for us to, you know, build this momentum and hire that many people, I think is just an incredible story. But it's not unique to UI, right? When you look at all the press that technology's got in terms of its recent layoffs, mm-hmm. I mean, again, Jack, they have had unprecedented hiring for 24 months. And they've got, in many cases, you know, quite limited hiring. Now, I think it's really important leaders have very authentic discussions about the reason they're making correlations to the headcount, right? Kind of adjusting headcount down in certain markets. Those are the realities of kind of the business trends. But I think, you know, keeping humans at the center, being authentic as you can. And I think the other interesting trend right now is most of these people getting laid off, and I stress most, are finding new opportunities quite quickly. So that just, you know, strengthens the what I said earlier about kind of labor scarcity and a trend I think we're going to continue to see. So again, platform for employees to really think about, okay, there's going to be incredible opportunities out there. I will be much better positioned if I invest in myself on the future skills that I need. And then frankly, really assess and make sure they're utilizing the leadership skills they already have. If you're a great collaborator, if you're a great communicator, if you're a great people developer, Jack, that's going to matter in the next generation and probably more than ever.
That's also, and just to give people context, and I neglected to ask you at the onset, but maybe could you share a little bit about the type of roles that are at EY? You know, because I hear EY, my first thinking is audit, accounting, but it's much more than that. You know, can you share for people who are interested in EY, like, hey, what do you have? What type of opportunities? Where are they? Are you going to say all in Canada or, you know, in other places too?
Yeah. So look, Jack, I think first of all, our recruiting team will be incredibly pleased you offered me the chance to say this. So look, we have four businesses around the world. They're four great businesses. So we have our assurance practice, which we, house our audit practice. We're, one of the biggest and best brands in the audit business around the world. That's been a terrific business for 150 years, but being radically disrupted with AI and technology. And so a lot of new skills coming into that business, but that's a great business. We are the world's largest and best tax business around the world. We have tax professionals in 150 countries delivering, very complex solutions from kind of tax planning and compliance to, kind of full outsourced technology solutions for our clients around the world. Again, another business is being kind of disruptive, very aggressively by governments and other folks right now. Then, of course, we've got our consulting business, which includes business consulting and technology consultants. We have over 70,000 technology consultants in the business now. And so talk about kind of a change when people think about EY. I mean, we do some of the most, complex technology in the world now, accessing the ecosystem with our great alliances with people like Microsoft, for example. So these are very exciting to us. And then finally, we've got a really exciting kind of build in our strategy and transactions business. And so we've been involved in some of the largest transactions in the last kind of 20 years around the world. We've built out a world-class strategy business as well. So we do the kind of front end, all the kind of transformation and right through kind of the outsourcing end-to-end. So I think that's really kind of a synthesis of the four businesses overall. But within that, Jack, and this is where it really gets interesting, and that's where it comes back to the AI and kind of the skills ontology that we've developed with some of the ecosystem. I mean, underpinning all these, if you look at technology consulting, for example, we've developed detailed career frameworks and skilled ontology for all the jobs we see in technology consulting. I'm not going to try to take you through that, but if you look at cyber, for example, which is a really kind of growing and evolving area, there are, 11 different levels of kind of cyber skills in the organization. And we've got kind of development plans and skilling kind of for all of those through our kind of EY badge platform, which I think is really exciting. So again, it's a very diverse, very kind of complex organization in some respects. And that's why we think kind of the role of kind of data and technology to piece this all together to deliver the right skilling and employee experience will really be kind of a differentiator for us right when we go forward. To make it simple for your listeners, I mean, one of the best examples we've got is kind of on the recruiting front. So we have kind of some AI tools. So for example, you can go on to EY.com. Jack Kelly can upload his CV. And based on the words in your CV, it will match your CV to the open jobs that exist at EY and then give you the path to make that application, give you some coaching. You could talk to a chatbot. So again, that's kind of technology at work. And people say, well, why does that matter? Well, first of all, it gives us great data because we have, up to 1 million open applicants on our system at every one time. We have 4 million people apply to EY each and every year. But we have kind of 1 million active applicants at any one time. And so we can understand, okay, from a skills perspective, kind of what's out there, what kind of questions are they asking us? And then to give people kind of constant feedback. And I think this really helps our kind of employer brand and really kind of democratizes the access to employment at EY, right? Because, it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter kind of what your background is. All we're doing is linking your CV, to our skills and try to find you a connection into EY. So we think it's going to be, we know it's already been a great differentiator. Look at the number of people we've hired in the last 20 or 22 months. We don't see that momentum slowing down.
I can tell you firsthand from being a recruiter, heading up a search firm, going and just wading through resume after resume after resume. Plus, when you submit candidates and companies want just a cookie cutter, you have to have exactly XYZ. And if you don't, sorry, next. It's torturous. And I think this new world where I'm really excited about this conversation because the more I can visualize kind of the next iteration of where we're going, particularly with you guys, where you're going, it's going to just change it and it makes it better because I can't tell you how many times I would have great candidates, but they would be thanks, but no thanks because they didn't have 100% matching and they didn't bother to see the skills. They didn't bother to really delve deeply to see what else could cross over. It's just, nope, you don't have, such and such, sorry, goodbye. And it hurts both the company for losing out, and it hurts the candidate, and it hurts the brand of the company because they're like, I could do that job, and now you didn't give me a chance. So this sounds really cool because it's on one level, people hear AI and they say, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. The other side, it's like, wait, no, this could be super helpful for people and make it a much better experience.
Well, I think that's right. And again, I think the guideposts for us are kind of the North Star is, look, we need to make this true pivot to skills. But underlying that, and Jack, you're absolutely right about this, you have to deliver an employee experience that is really meaningful, right? And differentiated to really create that stickiness and to strengthen the employer brand over time so that we can continue to recruit, you know, these kind of new and evolving technologies, but also find room for the traditional skills that are still really important, still a core of our business. And I think, you know, the magic is where that meets in the middle to create a diverse workforce, make sure your organization has those skills. And again, I think, you know, most organizations are thinking through this by industrializing the workforce planning. You know, some are further ahead on skilling, and, you know, many are struggling with kind of the careers and experience side of things. So that's what we try to bring together at EY. You know, admittedly, it's a journey. And again, I think things like the current iteration of technology changes is just driving such acceleration in the need to get this done more quickly. It really is. It's one of the great learnings. I would admit, though, Jack, I mean, look, it's not a one size fits all. We have business in 150 countries around the world. And if you think about, you know, the cultural attitudes, the different kind of infrastructure challenges, the different way in which healthcare is delivered around the world, and then what's kind of an employer's responsibility to kind of work together in that ecosystem and stitch together solutions. And so, you know, what we've started is, I think, a great dialogue. And we've got some amazing pieces of work around the world that provide, you know, apps or kind of physical counseling, the upskilling to both leaders, counselors, and staff in terms of, you know, how to provide access, how to create psychological safety, how to eliminate kind of bias in the workplace, for example. But it is a journey. I mean, again, the world is a complex place. It's not a one size fits all. And what I encourage the teams to do is experiment a little bit. You know, we've got different apps in different parts of the world because, again, the access to healthcare can be very different, particularly the access to mental health resources. And so, you know, I get the craziest questions from time to time, Jack. You know, people will say, Trent, you know, I've got $1,000 left on my fitness credit for the year. Should I buy a treadmill? And I kind of joke. I say, well, I know some people use them and some people use them as a laundry basket. So I'm not going to tell you whether you should use a treadmill, but, you know, I'm glad you're kind of focused and say, look, what do I love to do? What would help my health and wellness? And then, you know, our responsibility, I think, in addition to providing access to those resources, is to help create the environment where people do have time and space. And I think that's something that organizations didn't do well necessarily through COVID. I think people started to react, but, you know, the old way of kind of measuring, you know, kind of employee success was, you know, how many hours do they spend in the office, or kind of presenteeism. It then became, well, how much time are they on screen? Is their screen always green? Can I get a hold of them? I mean, that's just a different way of measuring presenteeism. And frankly, it's lazy and not a good metric for the health index and the productivity of your workforce. So again, I think we're rethinking, you know, the KPIs that matter, rethinking the recognition that needs to go along with that. So how do you recognize great counselors to do this, right? That, you know, work with Jack and Trent, make sure they've got the time and space, make sure they're supported, for example, to do their EY Tech MBA or their Master's of Sustainability or a badge on inclusive leadership. Right. So I think those are the things that will really make a difference at the end of the day. And I think all organizations are struggling just to kind of make that transition and get there. But it's a really important journey and it's fun. And it's so rewarding because your employees tell you, I mean, we have a very active employee listening campaign. And I love it because we have a fairly young workforce. I think 2/3 of our workforce, Jack, are probably under, you know, 35 years of age, many of them in their 20s. And the great thing about this demographic is, you know, they will tell you what they want. And I think that just creates a great great dialogue, and it gets translated into needs. So, you know, over the last 12 months, we've changed some of our benefits around the world in direct feedback. Well, it's amazing. And I can tell you from those 280,000 people we hired over the last kind of 22 months, they tell us one of the main reasons they join us is because of our purpose. So EY's purpose is building a better working world, which kind of resonates both internally and externally. But let me give you a real life example. We have an EY Ripples campaign where EY employees can participate around the world on initiatives in their communities. It could be something on sustainability. It could be kind of, access to education, local community. And there are many, many examples, Jack, around the world. But here's the interesting thing, Jack. For people, and we measure this, for people who participate in these programs, they are higher rated. They get promoted faster. They rate their experience higher in terms of the EY exceptional experience. So here we just provide these platforms and we encourage kind of participation and support. But when people access these, all these other great things happen to the individual. So isn't that interesting that, people want to join an organization that has a purpose, but then you've got to activate that purpose and give people the platform so they can customize it somewhat, right? Because it's not for me to tell them what they should be involved in. But if we're strengthening communities and connecting that to the EY experience, Jack, again, comes back to time and space. We've got to make sure our employees have the time to kind of deliver and do these things. But when they do it, they are so much more successful. And we are a primary beneficiary of that. So isn't that interesting?
It's hard to stop it, right? It's like it becomes this force.
Yeah, it really is. And again, like we encourage the teams to kind of, develop their own ideas.
That's great. I know you've given so much insight. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you think, people would want to know about you, about the company, the organization?
Well, look, as you can tell, I'm an optimist. And I think our organization is too. We have access to kind of transformation experiences, working with governments, working with our clients, and kind of working with kind of people around the world. I think there's a lot going on right now with respect to technology. And provocatively, we think it's going to help kind of build a better working world. So our efforts are kind of framed at, using this technology to drive productivity increases, hopefully to make the work more meaningful, and then fundamentally, providing access to skills, access to experiences, and it starts with access to EY. So we're really proud of that, Jack. And I think, with that mindset, we think we can continue this sustained growth. Of course, our growth comes from the need for our clients to transform their businesses, which is really exciting, but we see no slowdown in that. And again, we'll get through these short-term challenges and the world will be a better place.
Well, this is fantastic. I love it. I love everything you have to offer. The thing. One piece that I really did like the jungle gym kind of reference, because I think for most people in their careers, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, but like it seems most people feel that their cohorts, their colleagues, just go straight up. And why am I not just going straight up? Why am I going up, down, down? And most people, I think what I've seen from a recruiting perspective and just, and been in the workforce, most people aren't Mark Zuckerberg who just like succeed and just go straight up. That's just a small, tiny, infinitesimal, group that just have it, just everything just broke their way. But for most people, right? It's you try this, it doesn't work. You try something else, it works. So I like that you gave that advice because you're in a very high level and you've seen it, been there, and you're like, this is what happens. It's not necessarily a straight line. It doesn't always work out the way you want to, but you try to make the best of it. You make iterations, you make changes, you work with it. And I hope that resonates with people. So especially during this time where it's fairly challenging in the job market, so they don't get discouraged, that this is just part of the jungle gym and just getting through it and getting to the other side, right?
Well, it really is, Jack. And when you look back on it, sometimes I thought I was moving horizontally or even taking a step down. But in hindsight, the experiences I built and the skills I built through doing those things made me a better leader and ultimately created more opportunities because I had taken the risk to do those things. And so it's not all just about using somebody else's path to say, look, that's a linear path up. That's what success looks like. That's not what this is about. I mean, it's really about, customizing and having kind of a personal plan, understanding what you love to do, And then gaining those skills and experiences. And ultimately, I think with that mindset, you'll end up in a different place. I mean, the reality is we hire people today to solve problems that don't yet exist using technology that's not available. So, you know, what's your career advice? And my career advice is get as diverse of experiences as you can. I mean, deep subject matter expertise is still really important. But as you're seeing with the current iteration of technology, that can change with the blink of a switch.
That's fantastic. That's a great way to wrap it up. I love it. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. This was, I think people are going to really benefit from this. This was awesome.
Thanks so much, Jack. It was a pleasure to be with you today. Thanks.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.